Hey,
Get up,
get
loud. We're
start
pumping
popping
up
up
our
the penis
penis
now,
now.
penis now, penis now.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the podcast where we go absolutely cuckoo bananas over our favorite characters from Degrassi The Next Generation. I'm Keely Bell, and you can join me every week with a special guest to talk about how these characters did whatever it takes and how exactly they made it through.
Welcome back.
Happy this Monday.
Happy Monday. We waited till the end to say it last time, but I hope the people are enjoying the new upload day. It seems like listens, from what I've seen on Anchor when I check the stats, listens haven't gone down or up, but they've stayed pretty consistent. So I'm hoping people like the new upload day. Hopefully you can like listen to it like in the car, on the way to work, something like that. But this is Cuckoo Bananas! ! A Degrassi : The Next Generation podcast. I'm your host, Keely Bell. And sad news, we promised a threesome this week, and we don't have it.
Much like real life threesomes, scheduling conflicts end up doing us in.
Exactly.
So I have brought a sock puppet with me today. She will not be speaking, but she will be here for moral support. Her
Thank
name
you.
Is Schmarin Berry. Blah, 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 blah. And Schmarin has no plot points because she didn't watch the show like I asked her to.
Right.
So she's just going to be a silent listener, much like the rest of you.
Yeah. Erin couldn't make it this week. She's in the middle of moving, doing, you know, real grown-up shit. Naturally, she could not come on and talk about a teenage drama with us, and that makes, you know, total sense. So it's just me and Daniel this week. I'm your host, Keely Bell, and I'm with
Daniel Herman.
Yes, my best friend and roommate. Yeah, it's just us this week. And who are we talking about this week, Daniel?
We are talking about Janine Tabitha York.
It's no. Always Janine.
It's
anytime there's a J name, it's always Janine with you.
Listen, it's one of my favorite names. I couldn't tell you why. It just hits my ear so lovely. We're talking about fine. We're talking about Jeremiah Tabitua York. We're talking about Tabitua. You ever heard
Tituba?
Of no, it's Tabitua. you never heard of Tabitua?
You did Jeremiah. You could have gone with another like last name. Is anyone on Degrassi have a last name that starts with a T? Wait, there
Torres.
Must be
Jeremiah Torres. Jeremiah Torres York. That's the name of their law firm where JT is a ghost.
He's the ghost lawyer.
The offices of Jeremiah Torres and you. All three of them would be terrible lawyers.
They'd be such bad lawyers.
just piss poor. Who are they representing? They're representing Bianca D'Souza, and they lose. They lose in court.
And it'd be like, the judge would be like, hasn't the defendant had a sexual relationship with one of your partners?
And then JT as a ghost would go, ooh, those were fabricated. Ooh.
I can't wait until we get to Drew. I cannot wait. It's gonna be a shit show. I have so many things to say about Drew Torres.
I also have many things to say about Andrew Torres.
But this is not a Drew Torres episode.
No.
This is a James Tiberius York episode, and it's our kind of season finale.
Woo!
We did it. We got through every single main character of this first group of kids.
We
now,
sure did.
The question is, should we do a combined episode for the adults? Because they were series regulars for those seasons.
I mean, like, do we do a compare contrast? Or do we do a combined episode? Like, what would you think that would entail?
I don't know, because it's
what
like
would you want out of an episode of just grown-ups? That's just pornography.
But here's the thing. It's I don't know if I would want to talk about their, I mean, like, I would have to talk about their arcs, like, as they pertain to Next Generation, because I don't know their arcs as they pertain to Degrassi Junior High, Degrassi High. So, like, I don't know what it would entail, like, just talking about their arcs as they, like, interweave with each other throughout Next Generation.
Well, you know? Because we know our feelings about, you know, how Snake goes through far too much. Spike, the worst. Joy Jeremiah could rail me. And then, what's her name?
Caitlin Ryan. Love of my life.
Love of your life. Paid absolute dust.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot to be spoken of. I think a combined episode would be fun.
Yeah, I agree.
All right.
So, yeah. We are here to talk about one Mr. James Tiberius York. And what are our general opinions on JT York?
As beginning comedic relief characters mm-hmm. go, especially the, you know, he has the Matt McGuire thing going on. He has the annoying little brother but without a big sister aesthetic that he's courting sort of thing, where it's like he's annoying. He's like, he'll wipe a booger on you, but also he cares, you know?
And
I'm usually not a fan of that character, but since he's not a younger brother, I don't feel completely and utterly targeted. So right. I can just enjoy right. him, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. He has, it's interesting because like we've said before, they coded Toby as being kind of a not... It's hard to say that Toby would have been deuteragonists with Emma, but it was kind of coded that way, where Emma was the young girl representation and Toby was the young boy representation. And Toby was very much main character-y, whereas JT was his, like, funny sidekick.
Yeah.
And then as time went on, they were like, hey, remember those main characters that we invested in? Yeah, one of them's annoying and the other one isn't going to get hot anytime soon. So,
yeah. So we're going to
put more, we're going to put more things into the fun, quirky friend over here and the fun, stupid friend over here, those being Manny and JT respectively.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I love JT, obviously. I feel like nobody in their right Degrassi mind does not like JT. And yeah, JT's definitely my kind of guy. Like, not anyone that I would want to date, but like, he's like definitely the kind of boy that I attract in life, like as friends.
Yeah.
So
everyone in your life is a JT York at some
precisely,
point.
Precisely. Yeah. Like, I love JT because I see so much of him in the people that I love. And obviously, I think a lot of people's love for JT is influenced by the fact that we have all trauma bonded over his death.
Oh, absolutely. Don't speak ill of the dead, but I mean, like...
But, like I feel as though if he had survived and just kind of gone to college or something, he obviously would not have the same lasting power that he has. But, that being said, I do love JT as a person, as a character, and I love his arc. I think his arc is a pretty well done one. It obviously ends abruptly because he passes away. But like,
yeah, even if he didn't die, he would have still been a really wonderful, like, person, which was yeah. nice. We didn't kill off someone because he was boring, you know?
Exactly. They invested a lot, and a lot of people don't know this, but I would recommend, listener, watching Ryan Cooley's Last Day on Set. That's a video on YouTube that they did when they filmed Rock This Town. And they talk to Linda Skyler and Steven Stone, and they talk about when they planned for JT to die and why. And they said, I haven't watched it recently, so I'm going off of memory, but like they said they wanted to kill someone. No,
they had a taste for murder. They yeah. wanted blood.
They said that they wanted it to be an impactful death, and that they wanted it to, they planned it really early on. Basically, they planned it around the time that JT does have the suicide attempt is when they plan that he would die in the future. So a lot of people don't know that. A lot of people think like, oh, it was a last minute decision. Wow. Decision for them to kill him off. But no, it was planned for a while. It was premeditated.
It was premeditated murder. Linda Skyler and Stephen Stone are premeditated murderers.
Murderers.
And yes, you can take this out of context. Because
they've done it three times.
They did it three times. Four if you count Terry.
So, yeah, I guess we can do our three sentences.
Okay.
How would you describe JT York's arc in three sentences? I'll go first because I think you went first last time. Haven't thought about it at all. All right. JT would want it this way. We're improving. Okay. The fact that we never got to see JT live to start a college improv group.
Honestly, I think that would have been his villain arc. And I think that's...
He would have gone to... Okay, well, we can do JT's... JT's life had he not died at the end. Okay. but JT York's arc in three sentences. Okay. JT York starts his time on the show as a funny, quirky sidekick character to Toby Isaacs, period. Quickly, he became prioritized and developed beautifully into a boy that we would want to see reach his full potential, period. In the end, he dies. I'm kidding. In the end, he shows where his passions and loyalties lie and gets basically killed for it, period. It still wasn't any better.
He was killed for being too goddamn funny.
Yeah.
All right. James Tiberius York came into being as a childish comic relief. Mm-hmm. Throughout the course of his run on the show, he became many other things. A car crash survivor, a father, a children's television show host, and a really decent human being. In the end, his life still outshines his death, even though his death really did bring everyone together.
Yes.
Period.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah, I wanted to tack on like a little bit of a, like, his legacy lived on within the characters that survived him. Yeah. And that's really the true part of it all. So I guess we can get on into these plot points because we've done enough dicking around for 30 minutes.
Yeah. So the first plot point is one that's very near and dear to our hearts, something that the youths of TikTok really need to understand. Stop faking that you're gay for attention. Take the pearl necklaces off and listen to me. So we're talking about JT's one of the most childish plots of JT York, which is really saying something.
Yeah.
Where he discovers that Liberty Van Zant, tiny, tiny, tiny baby Liberty Van Zant, has a crush on him. For no good reason, honestly.
Really? She was just so infatuated with him.
Yeah, and, you know, I understand this. It's always that girl who is just into the most ain't shit boy.
Yep.
But they're 12, so it's not like you can really insult them. But we're gonna. And Liberty had goals and minds and ambitions, and she was in love with the clown.
Yeah, it was unfortunate. Because he gave her everything she was not. And I've always thought that was really sweet.
Yeah. And then he pretends to be gay because he finds her repulsive.
Mm-hmm. And it's important to note, like, the inciting incident of this is JT finding out that Ashley's dad is gay.
Oh, yeah. And ain't this just how schoolyards work?
Yeah.
You figure out what gay is, really. Your first exposure to homosexuality. And then all of a sudden, everyone's using it as the butt of their fucking jokes. Mm-hmm. JT learns what gay is.
Mm-hmm.
JT decides to use this to his advantage because he doesn't want to hurt Liberty's feelings.
Mm-hmm.
He just wants to really drive the point home that he's not interested.
Right.
It works so well, he gets her pregnant. you know, I'm glad that he really hones his acting skills a little bit as mm-hmm. the series go on, because this is really sad. He crosses his legs and his wrists, and puts his arm around Toby in the most frightfully robotic way I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's so good. There was a gif of that went around Tumblr, you know, a decade ago, of just the whole thing, like back when gifs could be really stupid long, like of him walking into the room, sitting down, crossing his legs, tilting his head, and then putting his arm around Toby.
It was the head tilt in the middle, honestly.
It's because, the head tilt.
And then Toby's being roped into this also.
Yeah, he's like, wait a second.
No one speaks about a whole lot. Toby didn't want to queer bait anybody. You know what
the
I mean?
The fact that JT would have rather been thought to have been dating Toby than Liberty speaks wonders about, like, how awful he thought Liberty was.
Yeah, like, guys, truly, this is a baby JT being the most immature a person could possibly mm-hmm. be.
Though I will say, you mentioned kids learning what gay is, and then, you know, using it to create harm. He's not using it to create harm, which I think is the real, real immature way of dealing with learning about, you know, something that you're not used to hearing about. He instead sees it as a valid way of life and then goes,
this is a valid way to get out of it. Yeah.
Exactly. He's like, I could capitalize off of this.
Which also speaks to who he is as a person. He's not mm-hmm. a bad kid.
No.
He's not genuinely trying to be mean-spirited. You know, he's also... look at that, a child who is not homophobic. Look at you.
The bar on the floor.
The bar's on the floor, and JT barely grazed it.
Yeah.
By just not, it's like, oh yeah, gay is valid. Let me use it against this girl that I don't like with the Coke bottle glasses. Let's just get her in there.
Yeah. Early JT, honestly, like, you know, like a lot of these characters, JT does go through a bit of a personality reworking toward the middle of his time on the show. And, like, I don't know, like, early JT, I don't think I would have pictured him growing into the JT that, you know, we got to see make it to senior year. But I don't know, like, I just think he was so, like, scheming, opportunistic. Like, I always do this, and I've never seen all of Degrassi Junior High, but in the few episodes that I have seen, Joey Jeremiah and JT are very similar.
Yeah.
Where Joey, he walks into school and he's like, hey, I'm a schemer. He's the guy that everyone, like, goes to when they need a scheme. And JT starts out as that, but then he doesn't really... He weenies up. He really weenies up toward the middle.
Yeah, because, I mean, you can tell the difference between, like, you know, because we also introduce sort of tougher kids who also have the schemes available.
Mm-hmm.
And so JT, like, he has a very interesting home life where sometimes there's parents, sometimes
don't
there's
even
grandmother.
Don't even get me started. I was just thinking about when I was mentally prepping for this episode. I was like, we don't know. No parents to be hurt, spoken of. Like, he has no parents. At least, like, he talks about a mom very early on, never talks about a dad. And then when we meet his home family, the people he lives with, it's just his grandma. So at some point, like, if we're going with everything that's said in canon is canon, like with, like, say, Jay, we did, it, at some point between season one and season four or five, JT's mom left him.
Yeah.
Or died.
Left, died. Turns out maybe it's one of those situations where he calls his grandma his mom.
Maybe she was never in the picture.
Yeah, like there are families like that where it's like, you know, parents too young, give it to grandma, so you call her mom and grandma, like, interchangeably, at least at school, so it's not as weird.
Right, so it's not weird. Yeah, like, there are a few of those instances that I definitely am like, are we capable of spinning this into something canon, or do we need to just accept that it was a retcon? The only one that I can accept as a retcon is Manny's brother that disappeared.
Oh, yeah.
Because she says, like, in those episodes where she's, like, messing with Spinner, where she cries and she makes him think that he made her cry, she goes, it works on my brother every time, and then there's no brother to be spoken of.
Because they killed him. They killed him. They killed him, and they said, this will happen to you if you ever become a slut. Because, as we all know,
because Manny's he was a slut.
He was also a slut.
But I loved the faking gay plotline. I thought it was really funny and a weirdly progressive way for the sidebar characters within Ashley's big plot of finding out her dad is gay. I always thought it was such a funny, like, progressive side plot for the characters in the periphery of it all to kind of be like, huh, gay.
let's talk about it. Let's use it in our schemes.
Let's examine that.
Yeah.
But yeah, second plot point. It's you still, yeah? Penis pump.
Guys, I want to can we slow this whole thing down and talk about something really important for you and for me and for all of your loved ones. If you purchase a penis pump, make sure to purchase lube, and here's why.
Oh my god.
Did you know your dick can get stuck in a penis pump? Because I sure didn't. Not until very recently. I didn't get my dick stuck in a penis pump. I want to make that very clear. There was a person in my life who has recently gone through a very serious medical procedure and needs to use a penis pump in order to regain, you know, usage of said appendage.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's not me.
It is her. she's using a penis pump. No. But their doctor said, hey, you know you're supposed to have lube with this, right? Otherwise you could get stuck. And the horror that when I realized JT didn't purchase lube with this apparatus, he could have gotten stuck and that episode could have gone a totally different route. We could have had an emergency room visit. We could have met his mother. Or his maybe that's why his mother left him. Well, got his dick stuck in a penis pump. And so it could have gone all sorts of different ways, but instead, no.
Should I give some backstory as to why JT purchased and used the penis? Well, he didn't purchase it.
Well,
an even younger child purchased it.
And this is all because of, once again, we are bringing in Craig's canonically enormous cock.
Yes. So at this point, JT is dating Manny. And we discussed last episode that, you know, why they're together and such. And then JT stumbles upon Craig in the locker room and he goes to ask him a question about Manny. I think he goes to ask him about Manny and Craig having sex. And then Craig undoes his towel and there it is. The beast. And JT is instantly taken aback. He's probably a little scared.
He's experiencing feelings, not necessarily of arousal because he's not gay. He's just pretending for liberty.
Right? Yeah.
But he experiences a realization, a horrifying realization. If they've had sex and that's been inside of my current girlfriend, I'm in deep doo-doo, boys and girls.
He's like, wait, Manny is going to look at my stack of dimes, which is like a running gag. Everyone always calls JT's penis a stack of dimes. She's going to look at my stack of dimes and think I'm, I don't know, 14, which I am.
Yeah, as opposed to Craig, who is not of this world.
So what happens is that he's like, oh my God, he freaks out. And then Danny Van Zant purchases the penis comic.
Which, honestly, we never give Danny Van Zant the credit he deserves in fucking up everyone's life with that. Yeah, truly. Pump.
When he was a kid, he was certainly, like, he was a little bit of a chaos demon. Especially when it came to, like, Liberty and JT.
Yeah, because he was, like, in it, and then he was very, very much like, I'm gonna beat you up. And, but ain't that just the brother who doesn't know quite where he stands status-wise with his sister.
Yeah, it was really cute.
Yeah, it was Danny Van Zant, love of my life.
Yeah, I love Danny Van Zant. And, like, the fact that JT basically ditches Toby for someone younger than him is so rude.
Rude, but honestly, that's life!
Like, JT ditches him for the popular crowd. But then once, you know, like, obviously, like, he hangs out with Paige, kind of. He hangs out with all of them, kind of. But it's never, like, he gets, like, super close to anyone. He does, however, get super close to Danny Van Zant.
And, like, they have a lot in common. They have similar interests, you know?
Liberty.
Liberty. Danny Van Zant purchases the penis pump and says you gotta use it. And then Manny finds out about JT's penis pump.
Yes. And how does she find out?
She discovers it, doesn't she?
Yeah. She walks in on him using
it. Yeah. She discovers him in Medias Res, sans lube. And she goes, JT, you need lube for that. I can't believe that you are so immature that you wouldn't buy silicone-based lube for your penis pump. This relationship's over. And that's exactly verbatim, word for word, what she says. But she sees that he's very immature. And also, she was never planning on having sex with him.
No. At least not right away.
Yeah. And so, like, it's one of those things where, like, she sees, like, oh, you're really not in a space that I want to date you in.
Right. Yeah. Right.
You're, like, still a child. I've been through more.
Yeah. Like, that's kind of the introduction. Like, obviously, JT spends those first few seasons being, like, the class clown, the this, the that, you know? And he spends those first few seasons being that and it never really being questioned. And then, finally, we're at this point where this happens and Manny is like, you're so immature. That sets off kind of JT's arc for the rest of his time on the show. It sucks because I can't even say the rest of the series.
Yeah, just the rest of his life.
Yeah,
the rest it's of, like, his life.
Yeah, that kind of really, the penis pump really sets the tone for, like, the rest of his time. It's that, like, now he's got something to prove, and that is that he can be mature.
The penis pump turning point, if you will.
The penis pumping point. So we will come back to JT's
penis
journey. No, unfortunately, we can't. He is deceased. But we will come back to JT's journey with maturity after I hit you with this plot point, which is a plot point that I beat myself up for not including it in the Liberty episode. And it was so at this point, JT has finally given into his, or no, this is right before. I take that back. This is right before. This is the episode where JT and Liberty are given the task of coming up with a play or musical to put on to brighten up Degrassi. And their original idea is shut down. I don't remember what their original idea was. Yes. So they pitched Dracula at first. And then Principal Radich was like, we just had a death in our halls. Maybe something not about necromancy. as an adult now, I see where Radish is coming from. Like, you don't want, like, your school just went through a whole, like, trauma, and suddenly these kids are like, we should do a show where there's blood everywhere.
Yeah. And you're
like, okay.
But also, I understand where the kids are coming from.
Oh, trust me, I'm getting there. As adults, I see where Radish is coming from, but as, you know, teenagers, as former teenagers and current drama theater nerds, like, yeah, I understand where JT and Liberty are coming from, which is that they're feeling they're being censored, and the fact that Radish wants them to write a fun, like, patriotic is not the word, but like a school-spirited musical about Degrassi, quote unquote.
Yeah. How great the school is that we are all attending that had no murders whatsoever.
Right. That is ridiculous and stupid.
Yeah.
And so Liberty and JT, they're not together yet at this point. They are just a writing team. And they at first start writing this musical for Manny to star in about a lunch lady who is not Sheila. Rude of them for this Sheila erasure.
Well, because Sheila wouldn't shy away from the dead kid in the hallway.
She wouldn't. That's so true.
She would make him into meatballs.
She would. She'd walk by and be like, "Oh, I didn't realize it was Sloppy Joe
Day. I didn't realize that we got a new shipment of mystery meat. Waka waka."
And so JT and Liberty try writing this happy musical, and it doesn't work out. Manny's like, "This is dumb," and JT is the one who starts. Liberty is the one who is like really pushing against it. She's like, "No, we really have to stick it to Radish." And JT is the one who's kind of like, "You know, let's kind of appease him," because this is at the point where they have given JT a little bit of a bitch baby personality makeover, because JT in season one would never do anything Radish says, but yeah, in this he was like, maybe we don't want to ruffle too many feathers. And Liberty was the one who was really like, "No, like, this is, we need to fight back against this." And she writes, or they come up with together in Liberty's hot tub, the idea of a musical, a protest, if you will, where they would present as if they were presenting a musical to Mr. Radish. But turns out it's just a Mr. Radish diss track.
Yeah. And see, you say protest, which means we expect Emma Nelson to pop out of the woodwork and go, "I'm in."
No, she has nothing to do with this.
She has nothing to do with this.
No. And so then they end up going up, and Liberty and JT kind of bitches out on her. He's like, "Liberty, let's not do this." And she's like, "No, Radish is not so sweet," and it's terrible. But then Mr. Radish gets the idea, and he quits the next day.
He gets his little box and he get out of here.
I'm really, yeah, because I'm looking at the wiki right now. There are definitely points between them totally smacking him down like the hand of God and him quitting, but it really does feel like Liberty and JT's song made that man quit his job. Or like he got like relocated or something.
Yeah, he got reassigned, I think.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, and that is the episode where JT is extremely turned on by the fact that Liberty was so anti-authority. She kisses him in detention, and it's real sweet. And it's one of my favorite scenes.
She takes what she wants.
She takes what she wants. And what she wants is JT York. And suddenly he's a little bitch. So, like, she feels like she can go for him.
Not so gay for Toby anymore.
But, yeah, I love that plot for JT. And that, it leads into now my second plot point, which is JT's journey with becoming a mature man, because now that JT and Liberty are together, something happens. And what happens is that JT's stack of dimes ends up inseminating Liberty's bank.
Into her little coin purse, if you will.
Her coin purse, her piggy bank, if you will. I said this in the Liberty episode where, and this goes for both JT and Liberty, I would have liked to see a sexual debut plot line for both of them, like especially for Liberty, since she was such a sexless being for three seasons.
Jesus.
But it's true. Like, she was not, you know, she didn't entertain the idea of being attractive or sexy or hot. Like, she, it was never really anything that got brought up. And so the fact that JT and Liberty were suddenly sexually active felt so weird to me. Yeah. I would have loved to see that conversation. I would have loved to see JT's reaction to that conversation. And I would have loved to see JT deciding he needs king size condoms when we all know he has a stack of dimes.
I would have loved for him to reach for the penis pump and she go, no. No, JT, you're perfect just the way you are.
Yeah, as we know from the Liberty episode, JT and Liberty end up pregnant. And we have to then, and like we said, me and Aaron said in the Liberty episode, Liberty's pregnancy is way less of a plot for Liberty than it is for JT. It's way more of a plot for JT, weirdly, which feels like sex. The patriarchy. Yeah, it feels like the patriarchy, but also it gives into this arc that we've created for JT where he now has to prove that he is capable of being mature and grown up and whatever, because the whole inciting like incident of how JT finds out Liberty's pregnant in the first place is that she's constantly on him the whole episode in season 5 that he's so immature. He's going out for the morning announcements or something.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, you can't do that. You need to figure out something, you know, something more serious and stable. And he's like, what are you even talking about? And he's like making all these jokes, the movies, and he's telling Toby about their sex life. And Liberty is like, how is this man ever going to be a father? Granted, he doesn't know yet that he is going to be a father. But once he finds out, he wants so much to be involved and be there for Liberty and the baby. And this is really the big shift in JT that we see, because he's suddenly, you know, like most teen parents have to figure out, he's suddenly like, oh, I'm not just living for me anymore. I can't just be dicking around anymore. I have other things to think about. And it's probably, now I understand, I think, why they gave this plot to JT and Liberty. Like, I understood why they gave it to Liberty. And that was to tell us that teen pregnancies can happen to anyone, even your valedictorian. And that you shouldn't judge a girl for getting pregnant by thinking she's, like, you know, some kind of, you know, loose girl that has no morals. Because Liberty is the most moralistic character that we know. But for JT, I really do think now he has to be like, okay, well, now I'm not just living for me, I'm living for another person. And it's painful to see, because we have to watch JT give up so much of what made us fall in love with him throughout it all.
Yeah.
Like, he loses that like humor, and he loses that like that fun that we love him for. And we have to watch him be like, okay, well, now I have a job at the pharmacy, and now I have to pay for an apartment, and he's doing such a great job, and he's so dedicated to this, but we're clearly seeing like the light kind of like die behind his eyes.
Yeah, and he turns to a life of crime.
Yeah, and he turns to a life of crime, and it's like, no, not my sweet little class clown. But no, and then he sells drugs to Jay. Oh yeah, we didn't even talk about that in Jay's episode, that he basically got JT into selling drugs.
Jay, this was back this was back in the old days.
This is back when Jay was irredeemable. But yeah, JT goes and starts selling his drugs from the pharmacy, stealing from the pharmacy and selling those drugs to people. And then he, you know, obviously gets caught up in it, and he ends up owing people money and blah, blah, blah. And he and Liberty end up breaking up at some point in the middle of this. While the pregnancy's happening, they are off and on, off and on. And Liberty and JT break up, and he is so distraught over this. He attempts, trigger warning, suicide by shoving all the, I think it was Oxy, shoving all the Oxycontin in his mouth and overdosing, essentially. Yeah. And I I really do think that the painfulness of having to watch JT kind of like just lose everything about himself because of, you know, because of trying to grow up too fast, essentially, is really the most tragic part about that whole plot line. Luckily, he survives that. And Liberty decides to give the baby up for adoption, and JT is really saddened by that, but he, you know, he soldiers on. And we don't really get to see him get that light back until we see him going back into the things that make him happy, which is being a big kid and being very childish on his like TV show thingy, which is your last plot point.
Yeah, like he, and it's so weird. I still think the execution of JT and this particular aspect was very odd in that, mm-hmm. He tries so hard to be a dad to him and Liberty's baby, and then that ends up not working out.
Yeah,
to then immediately go and get a job that suits him.
Yeah,
the TV jockey job. I don't know what to call him.
He had that, didn't he? Did he have it before Liberty got pregnant? And then he had to get it back?
Yeah, because he had it, and then she said you have to do something more serious. And I remember going,
and it's
Liberty,
like he had money. He had a job.
He has a job. He's on television. This is not, I remember because the way they wrote Liberty in that respect was absolutely awful. She was a shrew for no reason.
Yeah,
she wasn't using logic. Her brain was mush, and I get it. Pregnancy
does that to your brain.
Yeah, but like she wasn't behaving like pregnancy mush. She was behaving like someone was riding a bitch for no reason.
Yeah, exactly. Liberty in that season in particular is very hard to get through.
Yeah, Sarah, you should sue. For attempted assassination of your character. but yeah, so, and Ryan should sue for actual assassination. You should have your whole character. But then he gets the TV job back, and this is, you know, where he sees himself going. He sees himself, you know, going into being a comedian. He wants to do all that stuff, and people have faith in him.
Yeah.
And he appears to be really well. The kids love him. And this is where he, randomly becomes the father figure of his next girlfriend's baby, right, which we'll talk about in Ships, but like he then leans into the fatherhood aspect of it and is good to Mia's terribly acted child.
Yeah. I once we get to the Mia episode, I'll have a lot to say about whoever played little Isabella.
Listen, we don't shade child actors. It's hard to cast, okay?
It's
hard to cast.
It's hard to cast.
It's not her fault. She was still so small.
I cannot with that child. She looks straight at the camera so many times.
Because she is 3 years old.
I don't know what to tell you. She doesn't have it.
So, he gets the TV job. He gets kind of self-actualized. And then, basically, he gets his light back. He works as a TV jockey, and he has that job up until his death, I believe.
Yes, he does. Which, yeah. Imagine having to explain that to the children on that show.
Which, they definitely did have to. They sure did have
they
to.
They probably were like, guys, PJJT passed away. How? Well, stabbed.
Someone slayed him with their humor. And
me with your humor.
This is why you can't be too funny, guys, because your friend will die.
Yeah, but his becoming a TV show host, or like a, because they call it a PJ, I don't know what that stands for, but that's like a DJ, but like on TV, public jockey or whatever. And he also has just like with Manny. He has a long line of being a performer, so it's a path that made sense for him.
Yeah, and it was, you know, if he had to end, you know, he was on the path that he was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And even sadly, you slay me with your humor.
Yeah, his last words were about being funny. or like one of his last words.
Yeah. And yeah, it's just, it's really sad that like we never really got to see where he would go, because I mean, he had the chops to make it to at least talk show host.
Yeah, and I mean? he was a writer, like he would have written his own material. We got to see him. Remember the commercial, the fries commercial, or like whatever it was commercial where the fries was like, get off my fries, dog.
Oh yeah, I he did do that, and then he got made fun of mercilessly, didn't he? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, like I agree. Him being an actor, and honestly, like, you know, obviously if Jay and Manny wouldn't have happened in a world where JT didn't die, and maybe Jay and Manny wouldn't have happened, I could see JT and Manny reigniting their love or whatever you want to call it in Hollywood in the future, like a hot actress and her not as hot comedian boyfriend.
Yeah,
that's like, Hollywood.
How are they together? You know?
Yeah, that's Hollywood for you. And Manny would have to be like on fucking Fallon or Kimmel, and she'd be like, "Well, funny story, we dated in high school." And the audience is like, "Oh my god!" She's like, "Yeah, I walked in on him using a penis pump."
He had no lube. That's why I broke up with him.
But yeah, and I guess that leads up to my last plot point, which is, so we've seen JT go through the ups and downs of this arc of being this little boy who, you know, nobody takes seriously, for, you know, because he puts himself in that position, to then being forced to grow up too fast, which turns out almost being his demise because it depresses him intensely. And then we get to see him slowly working back up to being not only the boy that he was before such a low point in his life, but he's working up to a point that he is even better than that boy, right? And he's at this peak of his life, and he is so dedicated to being this better version of himself that he has struck up a relationship with Mia, who, like, you know, Aaron's going to come on here and do a Mia spiel so that nobody listening to this podcast can ever hate Mia ever again. I will support her in that because I agree. Mia did nothing wrong. Mia Jones did nothing wrong. But he and Liberty are too, like, they've gone through too much right now. They cannot be together currently. So he goes and dates Mia, who coincidentally has a child.
just the weirdest of coincidences.
And her daughter loves PJJT. She watches him. She watches him whenever. And he and Mia are together. But the problem here is that Mia has enemies.
Mia has many, many, many enemies.
She's from Lakehurst, pre it burning down. And there are boys there that are her exes, that, you know, have strong feelings about her. And this sparks a feud between the Lakehurst boys and the Degrassi boys, where they keep coming around and like pestering the Degrassi boys because like Mia is there. It's such a weird like motivation. Like, imagine being a stalker. Like,
yeah, and like she's pregnant, you got, she has a whole child. What do you want from her?
Right. Like they're just like she's suddenly this like, who is it Helen of Troy, am I thinking of? Like, you toss her into the fray and everyone kind of just fights over her. Maybe that's why people don't like Mia. I can see that now. But yeah, like she's just suddenly tossed into the school and people are being attacked just for liking her now that she's here. And JT is one of those people who is being attacked for his feelings for Mia. And it is this whole thing. People are getting beat up everywhere. There's fights. It's crazy. It's the introduction of Johnny DeMarco. We stan. Oof. And then, you know, the party happens. Rock This Town is such a great episode. Like, structurally, like stylistically, it's a wonderful episode. Like, we've got the plots going on and they're all kind of intertwining. The main plot being that it's Liberty's birthday and Manny wants any excuse to party just because she and Craig have just broken up because he was on coke.
Yeah.
And so Manny throws this party for Liberty, quote unquote for Liberty's birthday. It's really just a party. We love Manny. That's such a Manny thing. And it's at Emma's house because Snake and Spike are out of town. And it's such a great, like, way of getting everybody together. So, like, the old college kids come to the party and, you know, the new kids come to the party and everyone's just kind of there. And we've got Emma trying to lose her virginity. And we've got, like, all these, like, fun things going on. And at the same time, we've got JT having this, like, internal struggle of whether or not he's still in love with Liberty. And he comes to the realization that, yes, he is. And Liberty is kind of like, I don't remember exactly where Liberty stands at emotionally in this episode, but she's like, kind of like, the big climax of the episode is you're led to believe that JT is going to like run to her and be like, I'm still in love with you, right? But turns out he goes to his car and he finds Johnny DeMarco peeing on his car. And he,
as you do.
And he confronts him. Oh, it's not just Johnny. It's also some other boys. It's like the friends of Mia's ex-boyfriend who was picking on him. And he goes and he's like, hey, stop peeing on my car. And they're like, they're, you know, picking on him as you do. And then he says something wrong to the wrong boy, this fucking scary ginger guy who whips out a knife and just stabs him in the back, just so abruptly. I remember the first time I watched it, I was like, what? It's so jarringly fast. And I think the point is that violence is nonsensical and that people don't have to, like, have personal beef toward you to want you dead, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where, you know, people like they didn't want it to be Mia's actual ex-boyfriend who did the stabbing because that would have given him a reason. And I think this might have actually been a bit of a rebuttal to the shooting episode where they made their school shooter somebody who had certain aspects that were sympathizable, like that we could sympathize with, such as being bullied, whereas they wanted this to be a more like random act of violence and like it's just, it could be anybody and it could be for no reason at all kind of thing.
Exactly.
And that happens to JT and he dies in Liberty's arms while she screams like a pterodactyl. And it's so sad. It's so sad to watch, knowing, because it's like the tragedy of it all is he was going to tell Liberty that he was still in love with her. And she had no idea. And he couldn't tell her. And then he died. And that's why JT and Liberty like have such a high place in my like top Degrassi ships ranking, because of the drama. Like it does not get more dramatic than that. But yeah, I have my plot point here is labeled death and legacy. So like, obviously, just like Rick and the shooting, JT lives on way long after his death. Like, his death informs so many things that happen in later season 6 and also season 7. They create the little Zen garden for him in his honor. Toby and Liberty kiss because they're bonding over their trauma of losing him.
I love good trauma sex. We love good trauma sex.
Toby telling the doctor that they're brothers gets me every time. Yep. I sob.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, his death really like, you know, lingers, and also like the whole Lakehurst coming to Degrassi thing is only exacerbated by the fact that Lakehurst kids killed a Degrassi kid. And So it's all just kind of, he stays long after he's gone, and that's, you know, what he deserves. And yeah, like, I don't know. It's just, like, we obviously, we get the mini with him and Liberty where it's like, he's gone, but not really. And she's talking to his ghost, and it's beautiful. And then we have the mini of him helping Holly J through, like, it's the Ghost of Christmas Past mini.
Yeah.
Where he's like, Holly J is like her Bob Cratchit or whatever. And that one's really cute because it's like JT and Holly J, I feel like they would have had a good, like, if he were rapport. Around while she, yeah, if he were around while she was around, they would have had a great rapport. Honestly, now that I'm thinking of it, I could ship that.
Well, because, like, he wouldn't deal with any of her shit. No, and she wouldn't deal with any of his shit.
Exactly, exactly. And so, and also, like, we get to see how his loss affects Mia. Because, you know, people love to forget about it. Mia was indeed JT's girlfriend when he died. And yep. It was because of her, or, you know, because of their relationship that he died. Like, he was targeted by the friends of her ex-boyfriend. Like, that is terrible. Like, that's a terrible thing for her to have to, like, carry with her throughout her life.
Like, I got my boyfriend killed.
Mm-hmm. Which, like, we never really see her have that. We see Johnny DeMarco have more
emotional impact than that.
Yeah, like, we see Johnny DeMarco be, like, more affected by JT's death than we see Mia. And I think that's another reason why people might not like Mia that much, is that it's like, suddenly you're, you know, going after Sab.
Yeah, with
on the, like, badminton team.
Like, there's mourning, but there's not, like, emotional arc.
No, exactly.
She's just being rude about a slideshow, you know?
Exactly. And so, yeah, I guess that's JT's legacy. Like, he lives on well after he's gone, and in the hearts of his peers. And he honestly, like, his death brings Emma, Manny, Toby, and Liberty back together. Like,
yeah, because they basically weren't really cohabitating in plots anymore.
No, they really weren't. And then once Manny threw Liberty the party, and, like, I think Liberty even says it in the episode, she's like, we haven't spoken in, like, 3 months or something like that. And Manny's like, it's okay, we're throwing a party. It's kind of, they're alluding to the fact that, yes, this friend group has drifted apart. This friend group that we recognize from season one as all being all together has drifted apart. Like, honestly, JT and Toby had drifted apart a little bit, and Liberty and Toby were probably the closest, and Emma and Manny. And then JT was off, you know,
doing his own thing,
being a TV host, dating Mia. But they had all kind of drifted apart. And then once JT is murdered, they all kind of come back together, and they spend the rest of season 6 and season 7 fairly much together. Like, they end, like, their graduation episode, they're all pretty, pretty tight again. So it's, you know, his death is obviously senseless, but, you know, from a narrative standpoint, it has some good and some meaning.
Yeah, I mean, like, once you insert random acts of violence, you know, how do people respond?
Right. And
these characters, as you see, would all come together. Because of course they would.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. I really wish we could have seen Paige come back and mourn him in canon. She does come back in a mini, but, you know, obviously JT had helped Paige through her sexual assault. It would have been awesome to get to see everyone who JT had affected mourn his death instead of just his core group of friends and Mia. Yeah, I guess we can move on to ships now. He's got three. Which we've already pretty much talked about. So with Liberty and JT, we've got, you know, it's a classic case of nerdy girl, uptight girl, and loosey-goosey class clown boy. And like we mentioned earlier, Liberty is so infatuated with him. And it's because he has all the stuff that she lacks, which is spontaneity and, like, comedy and just, you know, at the beginning at least, he had, like, no reservations. He was always just like, thinking on his feet and doing what was fun to him, which for Liberty, she was always doing what was right, like what she deemed right for the world, like morally. And yeah, I love JT and Liberty.
Yeah. And it was also fun because, like, you'd think that JT doesn't care about what people think about him and Liberty does, but they both very much care about, they base their entire personalities off of what people think of them.
Yeah.
They're both very insecure, very sort of, you know, their life hinges upon their reputations, just in totally different aspects of it.
And yeah.
When they finally get to be together, weirdly enough, they don't really behave that way in the same way. Liberty kind of loses her mind a little bit, through the pregnancy, but it's like JT doesn't think about, oh no, how are people going to perceive me as I've gotten someone pregnant?
Yeah, like, that's so true.
I loved about him, because he didn't react the way that, you know, quite frankly, a lot of funny boys who got their way into the popular group would react.
His arc up until he and Liberty are together is kind of chasing popularity and chasing the popular crowd and getting, you know, the approval from people like Paige and Spinner and such. And once he and Liberty are together, he does abandon all of that. He's kind of like, look, that explains, wow. We're over here making realizations, because that would explain the personality makeover. It really 100% would.
Yeah.
Because he no longer has to perform. He no longer has to dance for these popular kids who's trying to impress. He has all he needs. The only person he cares about is someone who doesn't give a fuck what people think.
Yeah.
And so he doesn't feel the need to be that way anymore. That 100% makes sense. Wow.
Yeah. And I love it too. And Liberty, you know, she doesn't give a fuck, but she doesn't give a fuck by maturing and learning and growing and having to stand up for herself. And it's only when she stops giving a fuck does she kiss JT York
on the mouth. Yes. And that's why it's definitely not a coincidence that it comes right after she finally stands up to authority and speaks out on what she believes is right, instead of just, you know, just going with what she thinks the world thinks is right, such as like Radich. And it's not a coincidence that her kissing JT comes on the heels of her finally standing up and speaking her own voice. So they definitely bring out those parts of each other, and it's beautiful. Like, that's JT and Liberty is, I've never really ranked my favorite Degrassi ships. All I know is that Alex and Paige is number one, but JT and Liberty is definitely top three. I couldn't tell you if they're number two or three.
Yeah.
But like,
they're incredible. And I loved that journey for them.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And like having them go through something as, you know, life-changing as a pregnancy and then as traumatic as giving the baby up for adoption is, you know, not the direction I feel like anyone would have taken those characters, those, you know, kind of comic relief side characters. But it was definitely an interesting direction to take them, and definitely fed into the narrative that they're trying to push of JT having to grow up. Like we said, season five was a rough kind of, like, them breaking up and all of the, basically the whole, like, latter end of their relationship is, it feeds into the tragedy, obviously, because there's unresolved feelings there, and Liberty's oatmeal, and all that stuff, where JT dies never being able to tell her how he truly feels about her, and the way he feels about her is that she is oatmeal.
that she's oatmeal that he loves.
Yeah, that she's the dependable hearty breakfast that keeps him full throughout the day, whereas Mia's a meatball sub. There's a lot of empty calories there. You know,
there's a lot of empty calories. It ages poorly. But so does oatmeal, you know what?
Yeah, true. It's certainly an interesting way to take those characters that, like, we could have just, you know, had them gotten together and have them be, like, an annoying couple for the rest of their lives. But taking them down a darker path, on one hand, made Liberty completely insufferable, but made JT all the more lovable.
Exactly.
And that's unfortunate for Liberty. But
but that really was the trend. He benefited from that relationship, and she really did not, as far as the character perspective goes. Like, they really didn't know how to write her in a way that wasn't obnoxious after that.
Exactly. And then I guess we can do, since, well, we did JT and Manny last week, but, like, on JT's end, JT and Manny, he doesn't show much interest in her until she's, you know, starting to dress sexy. And that certainly speaks for what their relationship is. Like, I really think it was more of an infatuation kind of physical attraction.
A crush.
It was, yeah, exactly. And it was, you know, Manny was trying to go for a boy that she could trust, and she knows she likes JT as a friend at this point. And she's like, you know, because, like, they always say, like, oh, the best boyfriends are your friends first. And she's like, I mean, it's JT, but, like, if that'll save me from getting Craig'd again, then sure, let's try it out. But then it turns out that JT is really kind of putting Manny in a box, you know, not anything that he is trying to do. It's just an oversight on his part, where he's kind of like, oh yeah, I'm attracted to this girl, but I'm also, like, assuming she wants to have sex with me, and not talking to her about it, and comparing myself to the boy that famously got her pregnant. So it's kind of it's very unfair on Manny's part.
Yeah.
JT gets to be the guy that's like, oh yeah, I'm dating the hot girl, and I'm trying to be what she needs, but really it's just that he's dating the hot girl. It's not like they have much substance. And then they're, you know, they stay good friends until
his tragic demise.
Yeah. And it works, you know, they're cute. They were cute while they lasted. Obviously, like we said, there's not much substance there. And then there's JT and Mia, which obviously their relationship got him killed, but, like, I really liked JT and Mia. I liked Jatia, if you will. They had, like, obviously it was a placeholder relationship before he would realize his feelings for Liberty.
Yes.
And it was kind of the relationship that he would have that gives him everything that he kind of lost in his darkest point, which is his child and his sense of self and his sense of feeling like he's valued, which he lost a lot of when in his relationship with Liberty. Like, that was kind of a big point of their relationship, was that she didn't respect him and she didn't value his partnership in their relationship once she got pregnant. And Mia and Isabella depend on him. He fights for her to get a daycare in the school for teen moms. He's someone that they can depend on, and he feels valued by her. So I really do think that JT and Mia needed to happen for JT. Like, it was something that definitely brought him out of a darker place in his life.
Yes, I 100% agree. I don't particularly care for JT and Mia, just because I'm one of those people that, like, I found Mia annoying mostly because it felt like she was literally there to ruin everyone's lives.
Well, it was, I would say, on the other hand, if I were annoyed by Mia, it would probably be just because she is a bit of a wish fulfillment for JT.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, he's lost everything, and now he's got it all in this, in one girl. Like,
yeah, he's got a young model with a child, you know, and it just all felt a little too far-fetched. And I mean, at least for me, and, you know, Mia, grows on you, you know, like some moss, you know, she grows on you.
But like, here's the thing. None of us would say Steve from Blue's Clues is hot. But if my kid loved Steve from Blue's Clues and I was a single mom, you bet your ass I'm fucking Steve from Blue's Clues. You know what I mean?
I mean, you don't have to, you know?
But you see where I'm getting yeah, at here.
I understand. I get if Mia, the character, is going to exist, I get how she's with JT. I just, her whole character annoyed me because she seemed a little... There's just too much going on.
Yeah. You know?
There's too much going on.
That was definitely a thing. Like, I see that. I see that for JT and Mia. And I see that for Mia, too. We'll talk about that in Mia's episode because she is very, like, chameleon-y. She kind of just flows where she needs to flow. And that's annoying.
She's also a very more American soap character than...
Yeah.
Than others. She hits like, I have a pregnancy, but I'm also a model, but I'm also doing, I also have this going, and my brother murdered my boyfriend. Like, it's right. it's a little broader, her problems, than
right.
the more grounded issues that are that of Paige Michaelchuk, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally see that. I totally understand that.
Yeah.
But so I guess that we've hit everything. We've hit the plot points, we've hit the ships. I guess all there is to do is tell me when is time that you were such a JT, which is an interesting question to ask you specifically, because we did just talk about like what our Degrassi big three is in like astrology, and somehow you didn't end up with any JT placements. That feels false.
Okay. I feel like this was a trap.
To God. Be clear, we said you're a Paige Michaelchuk son. Was it a Miles Hollingsworth moon?
Yeah, and then a Tristan rising.
I would replace your Tristan rising.
Ma'am, you and I both know that that's not the truth.
I think it is, though.
But we're really going to say that I'm more Miles than I am Tristan?
Yes. Yes, we are.
Wow, I've grown as a person.
Yeah.
I'll accept that. See, now... This was a really gay chart for me, and now it's feeling very straight. And then Paige Michaelchuk,
even Miles though Miles is bi.
I know, but like, yeah, I know, I understand. Okay, but is JT York my rising?
I would say. I mean, you're a funny guy. Yeah.
Yeah, he's funny. He wears shirts underneath other shirts.
You know what I mean?
He could get stabbed in a parking lot at any moment. You slay me with your humor. Yeah. If JT were still pretending to be gay, you slay me with your humor, honey.
Girlfriend.
Still getting stabbed. I guess a time where I was such a JT, I mean... God, I really did base my entire persona for a long time on making people laugh, and my self-worth was basically, are you laughing?
Mm-hmm.
Cool, then I have a right to be in your space. So I understood that part. I understood the kind of losing your personality when things get rough sort of thing. You know? I really identify with, you know, being a funny person who's kind of on the outskirts and gets, you know, is friends with a couple of girls who maybe or may or may not be a little mean to you for reasons that pass your own understanding. I didn't have a Toby, but, you know, it was one of those things where it was like, well, actually, no, I didn't have a Toby in middle school.
Oh.
Yeah, and they went real Catholic. So,
oh.
Yeah. But he's cool. He's fine. He's a lawyer now. It's cool. But it's one of those things where it's like, you know, the class clown is so ethereal because it's like, you know, I was the smart class clown.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't, and JT kind of ran that line of like, you know, do you go the more funny route and get in trouble, or do you sort of rein it in? And I reined it in, and I I don't know. I always really struggled with, you know, am I intelligent? Where am I standing with my friends? Or am I a funny person whose path is just different?
Right.
And, you know, I still kind of struggle with that of like, you know, could I have chosen to be a smart person?
And as two smart creatives, like, that is really the big question. It's like, could I have done like a science?
And like, the answer is, my working theory is I could have done it. Mm-hmm. Would I have been happier?
No.
I don't know. No. I feel like I would be living in a nicer apartment. Certainly. Yeah. And like, I would be like, oh yeah, I'm successful. Meanwhile, watching any sort of media going,
yeah,
I wonder how you write a screenplay.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like, I always say, I could never have gotten my BA in anything that was not creative. I could not have not had a theater major. Like, I wouldn't have gotten through it. I could barely get through the readings of a theater major.
Yeah. I like, honestly, I mean, with the drug addiction of it all, I'm not sure I would have made it through either. Mm-hmm. I didn't make it through my theater major for a long time. Mm-hmm. I didn't make it through.
Yeah.
Whatever it takes, I did not do it. I could not make it through. And you know what? JT couldn't make it through either. So maybe that was... Sure, he died. But, you know, that's something. There's something in there where I was a JT York. I identify with him spiritually in his placement. And mm-hmm. I identify with his struggle. He went a totally different route. You know, something that I wish to emulate mm-hmm. is his hustle. Because mm-hmm. damn it, he got a job.
Yeah.
He got several jobs. One of them in the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
He really said, we're going to work for this. We're going to really pursue what's important mm-hmm. and, you know, fight for it and show what matters.
Right. Right.
Which is something I still want to emulate more in my personal life.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah, I like that for you. And you know, you've told me before the fact that you feel like you don't earn your space. You didn't earn your space in a room until you've made people laugh. That's totally what JT was doing in those first few seasons. And it's both a blessing and a curse. Like, it's both a strength yeah. and a weakness. Cause it's like, it's obviously a weakness for you and your internal, like, self-worth. Cause your validation is completely dependent on the people in the room with you. But it's also such a strength because that's how you've gotten all of the amazing friends that you have.
Yeah. And they're all tired of me making jokes now. They've heard them all. They go, Daniel, we love you. Shut up.
Like, just there are
shut up.
There are indeed times that I'm sitting down and I'm like, he's practicing. He's practicing a set right now. I didn't consent to this.
And you want to know the weird part? I don't know that I'm practicing. I'm just speaking to speak.
Yeah. And so I guess a time that I was such a JT. I'm so hilarious, so like there's so many times. but
you are breathtakingly hilarious, and you did get that girl pregnant in high school.
And I was stabbed.
No, that was me. I got stabbed.
but in the same vein, like I think I said something similar to this in the Jimmy episode, was me finally accepting that I am a writer, like that kind of, like, me giving, allowing myself to have that label was really is something that that worked for JT in that same way, where he suddenly was like, no, this is who I am. And I guess just maturing, like, I guess just growing the fuck up.
Right.
But also somehow learning how to retain the parts of myself that I value. Because there are, like, I've been told by my family that I'm immature and that, you know, I have a podcast about a TV show for teenagers. Like, when I tell people my interests, they're always very like, oh, like one time, oh, I don't know if I've told this story on the pod, but remember last year when I matched with that guy on Hinge and I told him about my interests and he went, oh, so you're just like a big kid. Oh,
yeah.
And I've never that gave me a complex for like a year. I've only Truly. Just now gotten over it because I realized that like we were just talking about the other day that animation and like things that were thought to be like quote unquote for children are written and created by adults. So those adults must be interested in it in some capacity.
Yeah. And it can be an interest and have you not be a full child.
Yeah, exactly. And so having a passion and an interest for things like children's media does not an immature person make, you know? And yeah. It's like, and I had to really learn to accept that about myself is that loving and valuing children's media is something that is a strength of mine because there's not a lot of people out there like that, you know? And so, yeah, that's the time that I was into JT.
I love that for you.
Thank you.
And I agree. I think your passion and your love of the niche and the youthful is mm-hmm. not a detriment. It's just
exactly
a thing that you are passionate about.
Yeah, because like I would rather get stabbed on the side of a car than watch The Godfather. You know what I mean? Like
you would rather die in Johnny DeMarco's piss than watch a Tarantino movie.
Exactly. And people will like be like, "That's not you're not a real like film person." Then I'm not a film person. I will never claim to be a film person. However, I do like writing stories, and I do like writing them for a visual medium. So like. Elitists can fucking suck it. what a way to end the JT episode.
He wouldn't have it any other way.
He really wouldn't. But I wanted to tack on what we could have seen for JT's life had he not died in Johnny DeMarco's piss.
Enjoying Johnny DeMarco's piss in a different capacity. Certainly.
What? Caillou! Ni hao! What?
I don't know. Something about JT York screams piss kink to me.
No! That's the only contender for episode title we have. I can't go with that.
I can't put my finger on it. Is it the penis pump? Is it that shit-eating grin? We don't know. No, I think I definitely think he could have gone on to host a more adult program.
Mm-hmm.
I think I see talk show host for him. Mm-hmm. I see, you know, content creator for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see a bright future where, you know, eventually we'll investigate his past to be like, so whatever happened to Baby York?
Right.
And it'll be like, well, I mean, it was more Baby Van Zandt, but like, you know.
Right. his adopted child being like watching his adopted child watching him on TV and being like, oh, that's my favorite guy in the world. I love that guy. Why couldn't he be my dad? And his family's like, well,
as it turns out, that is your dad.
That is your dad.
and he got stabbed, but he survived.
Yep, in this universe.
In this universe, he survived. And but we have you now anyway. So
yep.
Clean your room, jackass.
But yeah, I see the same for JT. Like I said, I would have loved to see him get to go to college, start an improv group.
I think you would love the idea of that, but actually seeing it play out, you'd see him become the villain.
Yeah.
You either die here or you live long enough to start an improv troupe. And JT York did not live long enough to start an improv troupe.
Yeah.
That's your title. JT York did not live long enough to start a college improv troupe. And thank God for that.
But in addition to that, I could have seen him and Liberty staying together. Like, I think that if he had been able to tell her that he was still in love with her at the party, that they would have stayed together for the rest of their lives. Like, they would have stayed together, gotten married probably in their junior year of college, and then just wrote it from there. What else? I could see him and Toby. Like, you know how Toby started that podcast in season 6?
Yeah.
I could see him and Toby starting a podcast together.
Oh, absolutely. It would have been cute. And then, you know how Conan has that guy?
No. You mean like the guy that like Ellen has?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Toby could be that guy. Yeah. For JT.
Like, you know? On JT's talk show, you like cut to Toby over in the booth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that would have been so cute.
And he's the best man at my wedding, guys.
That would have been so cute. Oh, but yeah, like, I guess to properly close out the episode, this was Degrassi's first main character death. And like, that was huge for the fans at the time. Like, they didn't expect any of their main characters to die. Like, and then I think once it happened, we were kind of like on edge for when it was going to happen again, you know? That's why Cam being brought in was so like, exactly, because like a lot of people weren't on Tumblr at the time, so they don't know, but I was. So it was like, we all knew once Cam came on what his purpose was, and we all kind of saw it from a mile away, because the whole fandom had been talking for so long about like, hey, we've had deaths like Rick's and JT's, which were murders. Rick wasn't murdered.
Yes, he murdered himself.
Rick was murdered by Sean Cameron.
Sean Cameron murdered Rick Murray. Just like Linda Skyler and Stephen Stone murdered J.T. York. And you know what? They murdered Terry too.
But like, we had those the deaths like Rick's and JT's. And they were waiting for a suicide, and it was a long time coming for Cam. But yeah, like with JT being the first like character that we actually cared about and loved and got to watch grow and wanted to watch grow more, only to see him like get taken out so quickly and not get to live the rest of his life, was shocking for viewers and so sad. And people still, like, I still get like emotional at that episode, because it does feel like they took away a friend. Like, they took away, like I said, I know so many people like JT that it's like, imagine, you know?
Yeah, because they took out like one of your light spots. Like, they didn't take out someone who's like, oh god, that would be sad, but like, right, no one really talked to
like
much.
like Rick.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was somebody who brought a light to the show, and then you had to watch that light dim, which is why probably seasons 6 and 7 are not good. but yeah, I guess that's our episode and our season finale. We got through it. So where can people find you on social media?
I am Danny Boy Herman across platforms, all of them.
Great. You can find me at OMG It's Key across platforms. That's usually Instagram and TikTok. And you can follow the podcast on Instagram at Cuckoo Bananas Podcast. And you can email us at cuckoobananaspodcast@gmail.com. And we don't have any character analysis next week, but I think next week we will have another blooper reel. And then in the following weeks after that, as we gear up to get to the Peters, the Darcys, the Danny Van Zants, the Mia Joneses, yes, the Holly J. Sinclairs. As we're gearing up to do that, I will have some fun, lighthearted episodes, probably in similar vein to like what we did for Valentine's Day, or more blooper reels. I know my friend Lydia wants to come on, and she's never seen Degrassi a day in her life, so that ought to be fun.
Some crackheaded bullshit to ensue.
Crackheaded bullshit, exactly. So I hope you guys are down for the next couple weeks to just have a little bit of fun. And we will see you next week, I guess. Goodbye.
Goodbye.